From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. And on this day, Verizon Wireless is pulling out of rural service agreements in Washington County. We'll look at what that means. And serious controversy over federal flood maps along the Atlantic coast. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
After signing a multi-million dollar upgrade with a Maine firm to expand and improve cell phone service in Washington County, Verizon Wireless is hanging it up in eastern Maine. The company sent letters to 2,000 customers in Washington County urging them to sign new contracts with competing cell phone service providers by October 17th if they want to keep their current cell phone numbers. A.J. Higgins has more.
3 years ago, Wireless Partners, a Portland-based company operating in Maine and New Hampshire, was one of 20 firms around the country selected to work with Verizon Wireless to expand service in rural areas. Wireless Partners constructed 13 new towers in Washington County to provide better coverage along Routes 1 and 9. And then Verizon started offering calling plans with no cap limitations to entice new customers. But Maine Public Advocate Barry Hobbins says the company then found out the roaming price tag for the incentive was higher than anticipated. Now, Hobbins says, Verizon Wireless is pulling out of rural service agreements in areas of several states, including Washington County, Maine.
They're doing this all over the country, and we're the first ones that has been reacting to it.
Customers are now getting notices in the mail that tell them they've been using significant amount of data while roaming off the Verizon Wireless network. The letters then inform the customers that their service is being terminated. Hobbins says Washington County customers were simply using a service plan that Verizon promoted.
It appears that Verizon induced these companies to build out in the rural areas around the country and then significantly promoted it by, you know, saying that they were covering and they have coverage maps and ads and everything, saying they're covering the rural areas, when in fact now, after, you know, putting those ads out, they're now not covering the rural areas. In fact, they're cutting it back.
And without much advance notice.
This move caught them completely by surprise and totally blindsided them, as it did the customers in the region.
Speaking for Wireless Partners LLC, Jason Sullum said the company has made substantial infrastructure investments in Washington County and plans to hold Verizon Wireless accountable.
And in respect of that and the network users and the potentially devastating public safety and economic development consequences, Wireless Partners is going to exhaust every effort to cause Verizon Wireless to rethink this decision and to honor the promise of its LRA program under which the network was constructed.
David Weissman, public relations manager for Verizon's Northeast Market, said in an email that the company only notified a small group of customers who live outside the company's service area and who use a significant amount of data that it was canceling their service. Weissman said the decision does not affect customers who live within the Verizon service area. Meanwhile, public advocate Hobbins says he will be meeting with Maine Attorney General Janet Mills to determine how the state should respond. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Maine Secretary of State Matt Dunlap had some sharp criticism today for the vice chairman of President Trump's Election Fraud Commission. Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach has claimed there is proof that thousands of illegal votes were cast in New Hampshire last year. Dunlap's comments came during the commission's hearing at St. Anselm's College in New Hampshire today. Steve Missler has more.
Dunlap was responding to Kobach's column in Breitbart News, which was distributed widely in conservative networks and seemed to bolster unproven assertions made by President Trump himself that voter fraud was rampant in last year's election. Kobach cited New Hampshire election data showing that 5,000 people who voted last year registered to vote with out-of-state IDs, but did not get in-state IDs in the months after. Kobach said that's proof that voter fraud occurred. But Dunlap eviscerated Kobach's claims during the commission meeting.
Making this equation that somehow people not updating their driver's license is an indicator of voter fraud would be almost as absurd as saying that if you have cash in your wallet, that that's proof that you robbed a bank. I think it's a reckless statement to make.
Reckless, Dunlap said, because of New Hampshire's residency requirement. He asked University of New Hampshire professor Andy Smith to explain it. Smith said it's common to hear complaints that out-of-state college students are voting in New Hampshire.
But it is legal in New Hampshire for you to have a Massachusetts driver's license and have Massachusetts plates on your cars and pay out-of-state tuition to the university and still be eligible to vote because you are domiciled in New Hampshire, meaning you spend most of your nights here.
The New Hampshire Supreme Court has upheld this interpretation, and a report by New Hampshire Public Radio back in February found that most of the people who used out-of-state IDs last year were in fact out-of-state college students. Dunlap said New Hampshire's law is not as strict as Maine's, but as Dunlap told the commission, the political battle over voting by out-of-state college students is no less intense here than it is there. Last year, Dunlap took on Republican Governor Paul LePage for reiterating claims in anonymously distributed flyers and emails that warned Maine college students to register their cars or obtain Maine IDs if they voted.
And the idea was to, you know, scare these kids into not participating.
That experience prompted Dunlap to call foul on Kobach's fraud claims in the Granite State. Kobach, who has been roundly criticized for making unfounded voter fraud claims before, didn't respond directly to the criticism. But Dunlap wasn't the only member of the panel to offer it. Sitting directly next to Kobach was New Hampshire Secretary of State Bill Gardner. Gardner also said Kobach was wrong to claim fraud without evidence. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And finally, today, after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma, observers are predicting premiums for the cash-strapped federal flood insurance program are likely to rise. Meanwhile, along the Atlantic coast, communities in states from Rhode Island to Maine are already mounting their own challenge to the program on the accuracy of federal flood maps, which designate who has to pay those premiums in the first place. Fred Bever has our story.
Insurance broker Robert Foley's home in the southern Maine beach town of Wells happens to fall within a zone that the Federal Emergency Management Agency says stands a significant risk of what's called a 100-year flood. That doesn't mean dangerous flooding will occur only once every 100 years, just that there's a small but significant flooding risk every year that storm-driven waters will rise well above ground level. So when Foley built his home 30 years ago in a marshy area, he raised it high and tried to floodproof it.
He put in vents and a flow-through foundation so that if there ever were a flood, the water would flow through and not get up into the second floor.
He hasn't had a flood yet, but the investments helped secure the best possible rate for federal flood insurance required by his federally backed mortgage. Foley built his first floor a foot above the 10-foot watermark federal flood maps said was the level that 100-year flood would reach at his location. Now, FEMA is proposing updates to the maps in southern Maine, and they would raise the likely flood elevation by 3 feet. That puts dozens of properties in town that were previously outside the flood hazard zone right in the bullseye.
And when their house may have been fine prior to that, they're now finding they're at base flood elevation 14, when they were built at 11, and now they're 3 feet below base flood elevation, the premiums will triple, and probably greater than that.
Some buy as many as 10 times, as high as $8,000, Foley says. That pole vault of an insurance hike is why Wells and many communities up and down the New England coast are challenging FEMA's maps. It's not that they don't want buildings to be properly insured, but they think FEMA is in many cases overstating the risk, and in some cases, understating it.
The maps may be, I guess, mostly correct as they are, but they can be more correct.
Nathan Dill specializes in hydrodynamics for the New England-based Ransom Consulting Group. 6 coastal Maine towns, including Kennebunkport, South Portland, and Harpswell, are hiring him for a big data crunching project to make maps more accurate than what FEMA is offering and more useful for flood planning beyond basic insurance issues. Dill uses massive digital data sets for on- and offshore topography that can bore into just a few meters from one data point to the next. It's called two-dimensional modeling.
We will simulate a number of historic nor'easter-type storms that occurred, and then we'll simulate a number of possible tropical storms or hurricanes that could occur, and then use the results from that modeling analysis to determine what the flood hazard statistics are.
FEMA actually uses similar high-tech methods in the rest of the country, But its New England maps rely instead on historic data from 18 widely dispersed tide gauges that dot coastal waters, plus some records of high watermarks from big storms like the Blizzard of 78. Kerry Bogdan, a senior FEMA engineer for the region, says that one-dimensional analysis is appropriate here because New England's gauge records go way back, in some cases more than a century.
We're getting numbers based on this actually happened here. It was observed here. Versus the two-dimensional is it's all computer-simulated storms.
FEMA will consider the computer-generated hazard analyses as long as they can be validated by testing them against real-world storms of the past. But New England communities say there's another big problem with FEMA's methods: over-reliance on the risk posed by a phenomenon known as wave setup. Leslie Fields, a coastal geologist at Cape Cod's Woods Hole Group, says that's when a storm surge piles up waves inshore and raises mean water levels, but only temporarily.
But really, wave setup, it's a process that attenuates. Once that wave breaks on that barrier beach, that wave energy is reduced, and that increase in water level, it dissipates. It disappears as you go to the inner edge of the floodplain.
That argument has helped several communities get FEMA to change its maps, including in Boston and other Boston Harbor municipalities. Fields is now working with several more, from Marshfield to Manchester-by-the-Sea, to get FEMA to lower its risk assessments. But she counsels local clients to temper the anger they sometimes direct at the overstretched agency.
FEMA's job is a hard one, to model the whole coast.
In Rhode Island, some state officials have asked FEMA to consider raising the map's predicted flood levels higher, so far without result. Back in Maine, the coastal towns will need to present comprehensive new data to FEMA by the end of the year to get consideration of whether the flood risk here is overstated. Oh, and Wells insurance broker Robert Foley has a tip. If your home is newly captured by FEMA's provisional flood maps, it's a good idea to get flood insurance now before the new maps are finalized. That way, he says, you can be grandfathered at a lower premium rate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for September 12th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.